Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Time for another edition of Garden Talk. And today, Lisa Johnson joins us, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator. Great to have her back. And I'm sure we can talk about flowers, and we can talk about probably the vegetable garden, maybe a little bit about trees and shrubs, possibly the lawn. I've got a mole that's creating some issues in my lawn right now. Lisa, great to have you back.
Thanks, Larry.
You can join in, by the way, with your question at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. What kinds of questions are you getting these days, or what are you seeing out there?
Well, we're still getting some questions about tomato late blight because we're kind of surrounded right now by different counties that have it. We just found out today, I just heard in passing that there's a downy mildew that's been reported on basil for the first time in the U.S., and I'm not sure where that is, but that sort of gave me pause. Also, we're getting calls about sod webworm in lawns. Lots of exciting things. chipmunks eating people's tomatoes.
Yeah, there's no shortage of chipmunks and rabbits this year, is there?
Yeah, they seem to be as prevalent as the mosquitoes.
Oh, yes, almost. Nancy in Burlington has a question for you, so let's go to Nancy. Hi, Nancy.
Oh, good morning, Larry. Good morning, Lisa.
Morning.
Looking forward to the show. Lisa, we have a problem with approximately a 15-year-old cherry tree in our backyard. It's been very healthy. It's maybe 20 feet high. And all of a sudden, within the last week, it's dropped about a third of its leaves. They're turning yellow, and they're just fluttering down. My husband pulled away the mulch and some of the topsoil to take a look, and he's concerned that we might have that situation, I think you call it girdling. The main root, it looks like there's a large root laying right around the top, like almost encircling the tree.
Ooh.
Do you have any suggestions, any ideas on what the problem or what we could do?
Oh, well, how big is the root?
The root is quite large.
Like your arm?
Maybe round, maybe 8-inch diameter around. And he didn't know if he should cut into it or if that's going to probably just kill it. Or
that's probably going to just kill it. If you told me it was an inch or a half inch, I'd say cut it and then water the heck out of the tree for the rest of the season. But what you're describing, I mean, usually we see that happen kind of slowly over time. And I guess I'm a little surprised that it's suddenly started dropping leaves. You haven't seen any wilting leaves before they drop, or?
No, and it did not produce very many cherries this year. Not that we eat them, but the leaves have been healthy. We've looked for any type of, insects or things like that. So it did happen. Yes, it really happened very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And are these inner leaves or outer leaves that are falling off, or?
Inner leaves or outer leaves? Outer leaves.
Outer leaves.
Mainly outer leaves. Uh-huh, I'm looking at it right now.
Okay. And is there a sidewalk or anything that impedes the root system on this tree?
No, there's a large hedge close by.
Okay, that shouldn't do it. What I was looking for was I've seen that kind of thing happen when we have these hot, dry spells.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't know whether you're in one of the flood areas. Have you watered the tree if it's been dry in your area?
He's always very good about watering it, and we've had a lot of rain.
Okay. Well, that's not it either.
Rain.
Then
we hate to cut it down, going to let it go and see what happens.
That's about what I'd recommend at this point in time.
Yeah.
Boy, and
if it otherwise looks healthy, that's really weird.
And it has looked healthy. So.
Yeah. You haven't noticed any sunken areas on the bark or oozing or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
No.
I usually, if fire blight is going to attack it, it's usually in the spring too. Although if you've done any pruning, it could potentially happen this time of year, too. I guess I would just keep it watered, make sure that the mulch is not up against the trunk, and see how it does.
See what happens.
Okay.
Yeah. Wish we had more advice, but...
Yeah, when you've got a girdling root that size, there's not much that you can...
Yeah, the long term for that is not good.
No, no. If that's what's causing the survival or the problem that she's seeing, then yeah, probably, you know, 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Nancy, for calling. Appreciate it. Mike in Lamartine, let's go to you now. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an area, it's about a third of an acre, and we want to turn it into a prairie. It's inside of a asphalt driveway, and I've rototilled it twice, and I poisoned it twice, and it seems the more I do, the better the weeds grow. So I bought some black plastic, and I put that down. And my question is, how long do I need to leave the plastic down to do an adequate job of killing everything that's there?
When did you put the plastic down?
Tuesday.
Okay. Usually we recommend, you know, at least a month to make sure that you heat into the soil, you know, a couple of inches. The thing is, with the rototilling, that continues to bring up any weed seeds that might be in your seed bank, and that's probably exacerbating the problem with the weeds coming back up again. But if you've poisoned it twice, as long as you're not going to rototill again. And are you going to seed or are you going to use plant plugs?
No, we plan to seed this fall sometime.
Okay. Yeah, I'd say leave it on probably September 1st. You could take it off. And usually you want to do your seeding sometime in September.
Yeah. So that's probably... Timing's probably pretty good on that.
Yeah.
You want to try and kill those weed seeds that are near the top? Is that kind of...
Yeah, right. That's the idea, that you heat up the soil. However, it's kind of, it's a little bit iffy. You know, there certainly will be seeds farther down.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, it. The most challenging part of starting a prairie is usually the weeds and the first few years doing weeding. But this sounds like a fairly small area. And as long as you're vigilant, it mm-hmm. should be fine.
Okay. Good
Very
luck.
Good.
Thanks, Mike.
Sure. Thank you.
Priscilla in Port Wing, your turn. Hi, Priscilla.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for the show. Two problems, two questions. One, what to do about slugs in my lettuce, spinach, and Swiss chard? They're decimating them. And two, what's causing the pinholes in my arugula, my rocket?
Okay, well, let's start with the slugs.
Yes, ma'am.
Boy, I wish there were a silver bullet for slugs. Basically, what you need to do is, if you've got a major slug problem, you can put down some products that are labeled for vegetables. I believe that the iron phosphate pellets are, but you'd have to check that. But you couldn't put any of the, you know, the major chemicals down. The other thing to do is to try and attract them away using pans of beer, or some people will put down things like grapefruit halves or pieces of wood, anything that the slug can hang out in overnight. And then you, in the morning, go through and remove the slugs and dispose of them in whatever way seems fit to you. And that's about the best you can do. Years like this, when we've had a lot of rain, the slug populations are just naturally quite high. Any place that they can hide out, mulch, leaf mulch, and I'm a mulch proponent, but it's really hard this time of year when the slugs are kind of at their peak, trying to keep them out of a lot of our vegetable crops. You can remove any leaves that are immediately touching the ground. You know, if they're laying on the ground, that might help a little bit. Some people have used copper strips and put them around the base of the plants. That's supposed to be unpleasant for the slugs. You can try diatomaceous earth around the plants. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, there really isn't a silver bullet.
Is there any kind of gritty stuff that would discourage them
that they don't like
to crawl on or anything?
That's the diatomaceous earth. You can get that at most garden centers.
Okay.
So give
all
that
right.
a try.
Well, this is the first year I've put down cardboard for walkways, you know, corrugated boxes, because a friend of mine did that at his garden in Minneapolis. And that may be exactly...
That's where they are.
Causing, encouraging them,
yes.
because then they're hiding out under there,
yeah,
right?
Peel that up and just see how many slugs you can count.
Okay. All right. Well, good. You've given me lots of ideas on that one. Any notion about the little pinholes in my arugula?
It could be flea beetles. They have a feeding habit that's like that, where they make very small holes. I'm not sure whether arugula's on their menu, but we tend to see them a lot on beans and various other crops. But it just little pinholes, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. That's what it sounds like to me.
And what would I do to get rid of them then?
They're not easy to get rid of either, unfortunately. Flea beetles, first of all, they're kind of small and they're kind of hard to see since you haven't actually seen them yet. And the second thing is that I believe they have two generations. Let me see here. Okay, they do like crucifers, so... and they like cabbage, potatoes, let's see here, kale, bok choy, spinach, mustards. Yeah. Have you noticed any root damage? Some of them tend to damage the roots as well.
Well, I've pretty much just left them alone once I noticed all the holes and figured they were gone for this year, but... I'd like to know how to prevent them in the future.
Yeah, well, one thing to do is make sure that you clean up your garden debris real well, and because the larvae will pupate in plant debris and in the soil underneath plant debris. You can use floating row covers, particularly when the plants are coming up. Early in the season usually tends to be the worst part. But I'm checking here to see if there are any insecticides.
I don't think so.
Not finding much in terms of for vegetables.
So what is a floating row cover? Did I hear you correctly?
Yes, you did. It is a white-colored fabric that you... put over the row of vegetables. You get some of those bent metal pieces that you form a little hoop out of, and then you put the floating row cover on top of that, and it helps to keep the beetles out of that particular area. And you may not have to leave it on all season long, particularly when we have flea beetle problems in the spring. That's really the best time for it. Let's see here. Yeah, there apparently are some insecticides that you can apply at planting, but I don't have any information on what they are. Let's see.
Okay, well,
anything, Larry?
Consult a plant nursery or something then and see what they can tell me. Listen, this was great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thanks a lot for calling. I can't think of... Well, I'm at a loss on that one in terms of insecticides, but they should have some information at the nurseries.
Yeah.
Jack in Eagle River, we go to you now. Hi, Jack.
Yes, hi. I wanted to ask you about tomatoes. Of course, we're in the far north, and usually about this time of year, we start thumbing through our green tomato recipes. because I know that tomatoes don't ripen, you know, on command, whether where you live.
Yeah, isn't that too bad?
Especially tricky up here. And my questions are, number one, is there anything that you can do? Well, no, the first question is, do you need warm nights to encourage ripening of tomatoes? I had heard that years ago, and I can't do much about that, but I was just curious.
You need warm nights for flower initiation for tomatoes to be produced. You have to have temperatures that are over 55. I'm not positive about ripening, but of course you can do all the artificial ripening techniques. Putting the tomatoes in paper bags will allow the ethylene gas that they give off to be concentrated, and that will help ripen them. Putting them in a sunny window, I'm sure there is some temperature effect that's going on there. Making sure that you don't put any ripe tomatoes, if you put them in the refrigerator for a very long period of time, the sugars tend to turn to starches, so you lose the sweetness.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have some real nice cages in which they're now enclosed, and I'm curious, can we do anything about covering the cages in some fashion that might produce what you described, In other words, we're not going to take them off unless game's over, usually.
Yeah.
I had one more question after that, but is there anything we can do?
I would say anything you can do to raise the temperature will help ripen them, yeah.
Okay. The last question is, would you recommend any particular kind of tomato for an area this far north?
Eagle River, okay.
Eagle River. I must admit that tomato varieties are not my area of specialization. We do have a publication on the most updated vegetable lists.
Yeah.
The other thing to do might be to contact, let's see, I wonder if the Hancock experimental station would be close enough that they might be able to recommend some for that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I go by there all the time. I know where it is.
Sure. I'd stop in and ask.
Yeah, because they probably have some good suggestions.
Okay, good.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with your question at 1-800-642-1234 or via email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller with Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension horticulturist, Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more gardening questions here with Lisa Johnson. I'm Larry Mueller. Again, thank you for listening in. And Mary in Rubicon is up next, so let's go to Mary. Hi, Mary.
Good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
Thanks for being there. Yeah, I just got done cutting my lawn and running over about 30 feet of Queen Anne's lace. How do I get rid of that stuff?
Oh, that is awful stuff.
It's
related to our carrot that we eat, so you know what the root is like.
Ugh.
And with a root that is a heavy-duty taproot like that, it can be, very hard to pull them out. And, of course, they do seed rather prolifically.
Yes.
Have you tried any broadleaf weed control types?
I did a weed and feed, and it didn't even seem to touch.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought.
Yeah.
Some of those weed and feeds are pre-emergent, so this would have to be, you'd have to make sure that it's for post-emergent.
Okay.
The other thing that you could try doing is using one of those broadleaf type sprays, that have 2,4-D, for example, in them.
Okay.
And making sure that you have leaves and stems and so on there that are available to take up the spray.
Uh-huh.
So probably right after mowing is maybe not the best time to do it.
Oh.
You want to let them grow up a little bit. And the best time of year to do it would be when they're actively growing in the spring. But if they put on new growth after you've mowed them, that's a good time to do it as well. And if you're using just a broadleaf product, not something like Roundup that's non-selective between lawn grasses and broadleaf weeds, then you should hopefully be able to get rid of it. If you do end up having to excavate it, try doing it after a rain. The other thing to do is to make sure that the flowers all get pulled off before they go to seed.
Ah, good idea.
Keep those seeds from germinating.
Well, I've got about 40 quarts of dill pickles I'm fixing right now.
Well, that'll keep you busy.
Yeah, the rest of my day.
Oh, man.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks a lot for calling, Mary. Appreciate it. Nick emailed us and said this relates to the flea beetles.
Okay.
He checked with Rodale, and Rodale says two applications of rotenone 48 hours apart.
Okay.
So that's at least what Rodale says.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah, our fact sheet does. Usually they have the active ingredient, but there's nothing there.
Nothing there. Keith in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Keith.
How you doing? Good morning.
Morning.
My question is I'm having a problem with an insect at my house. Now, I live north of the Dells, right by the Wisconsin River. And these beetles, I don't know what they are. They're pretty big. They're probably about a half inch long by maybe a half a centimeter wide. And their color is like, sometimes they look like they have tints of green in them, but it's a lighter color. They're not, it's like a whitish green.
We know what you're talking
about. They're eating
about.
The flowers, destroying the flowers, eating just the buds, not so much touching the greens, but the flowers. Do you know what that could be?
It's probably Japanese beetle.
Okay.
Are they kind of coppery, kind of greenish, metallic-y?
No, they're not metallic-y, not at all. They're more of a, they're just a plain Jane color. They do look like just have a really light green to them. They're not metallic at all. And they have a one stripe down their back, and their color is a whitish. It's kind of a weird color, a whitish green.
Are they a beetle type of insect, though?
Yes. Yes, they are a beetle type of insect, yes.
Would they be a young version of Japanese beetle? No?
No.
They like to mate on the flowers. They're always on top of each other, and they're laying underneath.
Boy, that sounds like Japanese
sure
beetle. They have no shame.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe they are.
I've seen
the metallic bugs, and they just don't look similar. But anyhow, maybe the way to deal with them is similar. Now, I put on some the powder, it's like an insecticide you would just sprinkle on the flower. Not sure what it's called. I think the main ingredient is the stuff they spray in the fields for the corn there. And it seems that it gets them off it while it's on there. The rain comes and, you know, it washes the powder away. They're back the next day with all the rain we've been having.
Mm-hmm.
They were really bothersome in the beginning of the season. They're less now, a lot less now, but there were just tons. I don't want it to happen next year where pretty much destroyed all my flowers.
Okay. What I would recommend is that you take a sample and send it in to your local extension office. Send some of those beetles in. And I hate to give recommendations unless I'm sure what I'm dealing with. It would be like treating a disease with the wrong medicine. It sounds in many ways like it's Japanese beetle, in which case, unfortunately, you get to suffer like the rest of us. There's not a whole lot that you can do. You can try spraying with 70% neem oil, but you have to respray about every 5 days. Do you have a large property?
It's about 2 acres, 3 acres of field with lots of flowers planted everywhere.
Okay. I was going to suggest, usually we don't recommend traps because they bring in about 4 times as many beetles as you would have had. But if you had some place on the property that we could maybe attract them to instead of your flowers, but if you've got flowers all over the place, that doesn't help either.
I see.
If they are nesting in your lawn, If you've had lots of brown spots in your lawn area, or are you near a golf course by any chance?
No, but, you know, it's all, there's no trees. It's all field. I'm talking 40 acres, 60 acres of field around my house, and I'm the only house.
Hmm. Okay. Well, they do like to be in the ground. That's where the eggs are laid, and the larvae will feed on roots there, and then, of course, they hatch into the adults. Down here, we see them in the Madison area, usually about the 23rd, 25th of June. When did yours show up this year?
Late May, beginning June. And, you know, that you bring up the brown spots, I do remember in June there was some pretty big brown spots on my lawn that I seeded and watered and watered, and finally they're gone now. Huh. But then again, so are the beetles almost. I mean, they're not as bad as what
yeah.
they were. There are very few.
It's, wow, that they should, you're farther north than us, so that should not,
they should
not be hatching earlier there than they are here.
I would
send in a sample.
Okay.
Yeah, to your county extension office and have them identify it. It could be something like rose chafer, or
maybe. But you really need to
identify
somebody to take
the pest
a look at
before
it.
We can.
Or you can take also take a digital
picture
and send it to Phil Pelletieri as well.
Okay.
And the insect diagnostic lab on UW Madison campus, and he can identify it for you.
Excellent. And then know what we're dealing with, and then I guess they can tell me from there.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, just one more quick question. Candy corn plant, have you ever heard of one?
Yes, I have. It's a vine.
Yes, it is. Is it related to the cigar plant at all?
Looks
very similar except for the colors. Okay, my question is I got a really big one. I mean, it's just gorgeous, and it's climbing up some wood I have back there, and I want to bring it in the house. Am I going to be able to bring that in the house? Will it live?
Well, it's an annual. I have never tried overwintering one of those before. I'd make sure that you get most of the soil off of the roots, you know, your outdoor soil, and use potting soil instead, and put it in as much light as you can get it in.
Yeah.
For the winter.
And maybe create some light.
Yeah, you might have to use plant light as well.
Thanks for calling, Keith. Appreciate your call. And we're going to go to Augusta next. Let's talk to Glenda. Hi, Glenda.
Hi. I'm in Eau Claire County, and I'm also having trouble with the tomatoes greening. Lots of them. They look good. They're falling off the vine. They're healthy, well, nice skin. I've brought them in the house. I've put some in the windowsill. I've put some in a brown paper bag in a closed cabinet. And after a week, I've had no greening, or I mean, no ripening whatsoever. They're still completely green.
I'm getting some emails on this as well.
Huh. What are the temperatures like up by you?
Well, it's been a little warmer than last year. Of course, that's not saying much. the nights are, you know, 60s, 70s, once in a while, upper 50s. During the day, anywhere from upper 70s to close to 90.
Hmm.
Gosh.
I don't know what's going on with that. That
okay.
is very odd.
It's not very helpful.
I'm sorry.
And then I had one quick question. I don't know whether you mentioned anything about the sod webworms.
It's the moth stage that we're seeing right now. The actual larva is the one that actually does the damage in the lawn, but the moth stage tends to, you know, fly up when you walk through the grass and is just annoying people at this point in time.
Well, I've been having, like, these little webs just kind of laying out in the grass.
Long grass or mowed grass?
It's mowed grass, yeah. Well, it's not that mowed because it's been raining so much I haven't gotten to it, but it's about 3 or 4 inches tall.
Hmm.
And just little, like, handkerchiefs of webs here and there.
Okay, that shouldn't be sod webworm at this time of year.
Oh, okay.
You would maybe be seeing that, you know, earlier in the season. The moths are what you would see at this point in time.
Yeah, and I do have lots. They're little white flying moths. They just kind of, when you mow through, they pop up. And
exactly.
They have something to chase. Okay.
Usually they don't cause too much problem.
Wouldn't worry about them.
Yeah, I have a question into the entomologist to find out why they're so prevalent this year. But usually they're not a problem.
All right. Thanks, Glenda. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's turn to Barb in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Barb.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for all your programs, Larry, and thanks, Lisa, for being here.
Appreciate it.
Just a couple of quick questions, I hope. Up here where we live, there's quite a bit of maple trees suffering from the leaf curling, drapping, and spotting.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed just biking along that some trees are totally immune to it, right next to a tree that's totally covered by it. And I'm wondering, you know, is there something other than cleaning up the dead leaves and getting rid of them on the ground, is there anything else we can do to help the trees that do have it? And maybe there's immunity? Does that make sense?
Well, there's resistance. Immunity would be not as likely. I'm sorry, I missed where you live.
Sturgeon Bay.
Here in Door
Sturgeon
County,
Bay.
In Sturgeon Bay.
Okay. And you're seeing sugar maples that are spotted?
Not sure. We just have some mixed borders around our house, and I don't know what kind of maples they are. They just...
they're definitely maples.
Yeah, they're yellow leaves, so I think they are sugar. But then just along, you know, the road that we live on, there's some that are side by side. One will be fine. The tree looks perfect, and the tree next to it is totally drying up, you know, from this spotting and everything.
Yeah. Okay. The spotting, I mean, leaf spots are caused by so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
Early in the season, we usually see a disease called anthracnose.
Yeah, that's what I think it is.
Yeah, that often we see that in cool, wet summers.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see similar looking stress sorts of things going on later in the summer, particularly in sandy soils where we don't, you know, where it's been too hot and dry.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get drying up leaves. You can get marginal burn on the leaves. So
It's the anthracnose that they're suffering from. Is there anything, a bigger tree? It's, you know, one of my books says you can spray a Bordeaux mix, but how do you get to a tree that's over?
That's the trouble. You can't.
You really can't. And usually with the, if it's anthracnose, what we usually will recommend is that you clean up any of the fallen leaves, of course, so that you don't have inoculum hanging around for, next season. And, you know, if you did spray something, you could probably have some kind of effect by spraying the lower limbs, because what typically happens is that the rain will splash up the pathogen, the fungus from the soil onto the lower leaves, and that's why you see that disease presenting at the lower part of the lower branches first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's still cut up really high, so it's out of the way. But that, you know, that sounds like what we're dealing with. But I just wondered how some trees react and some
might
don't.
Be different types of maples.
It could be different types of maples.
Yeah,
it could be individual differences in their root systems, how much stress they're under, how old they are.
Right. And we don't have much topsoil in a lot of areas.
No.
One other quick question. I just noticed on a couple of roses that I have a little tiny green worm enjoying the new growth and eating like a salad bar on them and defoliating the newest growth. Is it
velvety looking or is it slimy looking?
It's very dryish. They're just little half inch, very thin little caterpillar like. It could be a larvae, but, you know, they're just very little and they're chomping away.
Caterpillar and larva is sort of a kind of synonyms for each other. I'm not sure of the exact species on that. You know, earlier in the year, we often will see damage from the rose slug, which is not a slug, but it's a slimy-looking little creature. So that's not it. And there are others that you might see at this time of year. There are inchworm types of pests. There are rose budworm.
Is that a real small little worm, like a half inch or so? Or
yeah, that's that's about right.
Light
it's
green.
Just that there are several different species that look fairly similar. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they are mostly light green.
Yeah, that's probably, is it just a regular caterpillar spray then for something like that?
Yeah.
Or?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you for calling. And we'll turn to Liz in Eau Claire. Hi, Liz.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I was just wondering, I have a garden at home, and our tomatoes are dying from the ground up. And any of the tomatoes that ripen are rotting from the bottom.
Oh, okay. You may have a couple of different things going on here. The rotting from the bottom sounds like blossom end rot, which is something that happens when we don't have even moisture levels, when it gets very dry and then it gets very wet and then dry again. What it is a calcium deficiency problem. It's not that there isn't necessarily enough calcium in the soil, but the fruit can't take it up when the moisture level doesn't remain even. Are your tomato plants mulched?
No, they're not.
Okay.
It's a real sandy soil.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that's probably what's going on there. I would try some mulch because that'll help with keeping the moisture level more constant or consistent. And there is also a calcium spray that you can get that you spray on the fruits that they can take up the calcium and help alleviate that problem as well. Dying from the ground up, there are a couple different foliar diseases. One is septoria leaf spot and the other is early blight. And those are both discrete spots that you'll see on the leaves. Again, it's a soil-borne pathogen, so if you have mulch, it'll help keep that from splashing up onto your leaves and causing that problem. Now, there's a potential that this might be late blight. What? I'm sorry, where
Eau Claire.
Eau Claire.
Eau
Claire. I'm trying to remember if Eau Claire was one of the counties they had late blight in. But if you haven't seen gray or brown spots on the stems, and it didn't sound like, you know, when you said you had brown spots on the ends of your tomatoes, usually they'll start getting gray and rotting from the top, but not necessarily. Yeah. So I think you've probably just got one of these two foliar diseases. Do you have internet access?
I do.
Okay. If you Google WIHORT for Wisconsin Horticulture, WIHORT, that'll take you to our garden fact sheets, and there's one on septoria leaf spot, and there's one on early blight, and that can tell you more about it, as well as the types of products, if you can't get rid of it, you can use.
There you go. Thanks, Liz. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about the garden today with Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Agent, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. Join us with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Catherine and Madison, you're next. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. Well, a couple things. I have a toy garden plot. Talking about rotenone, I find that Peaceful Valley Farm and Garden Supply has more information about what you're going to use because a lot of the other catalogs and sites sound like it's innocuous because it's natural, but this bionide rotenone is toxic to fish and wildlife. It's supposed to use rubber gloves, launder clothing after use.
Sure.
Yeah.
And people just throw it on like it's talcum powder and don't realize that it's you know, that it's toxic even though it's natural.
Right, exactly. There is that perception out there that because something is from a botanical source that it's safe. And that's not necessarily the case. It is labeled for organic production. I'm not a big fan of it, but...
Well, even Peaceful Valley a few years ago said, use it only if you're going to lose your commercial crop. So people, and I find people just don't read the cans, and other catalogs just don't really tell you what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of the Japanese beetles last year.
Oh, dear.
We still have them. I've been handpicking, other people handpicked, and I was killing the grubs as I went through my soil. There seems to be less this year. They're still bad, but there's less. But we also have the bacterial stuff on the tomatoes, so I'm losing all my tomatoes. Almost everyone is. The pathologist from the university was out looking at the farm.
Amanda? Amanda
and
Gevin,
now
she's wonderful.
We have the mildew, and it's killing all my winter and summer squash.
Is it the downy mildew or the...
Well, I guess I have to bring in the leaf and see the difference. What does it look like, the difference between the two?
Powdery mildew you're going to see on the upper surface, and it looks like talcum powder. Downy mildew, I believe, is, when I've seen it, is on the lower surface, and the fungal strands are branched usually. Now, I'm not positive that that's how it presents on cucurbits, but I have been hearing from Amanda that there are, I mean, downy mildew is certainly much, much more of a problem. Powdery mildew is sort of... We expect to get it every year, you know?
Right, but I got it before I got any vegetables is the problem. That's part of it. And then the other one you said is is it underneath the bottom of the leaf?
Yeah, that's where I've seen spots on the top of the leaf, but not the powdery-looking stuff. But when I flipped over the leaf, it's been underneath.
Okay, I'll have to go look more closely. And do both of them, when the leaves get it, die, right?
The leaves, well, most cucurbit crops are tolerant of powdery mildew. They may yellow, but they usually don't, you know, dry up and fall off. Powdery mildew, typically you'll find the vines still producing a crop, maybe less, maybe smaller, but not killing the plant.
Okay, it looks like some of the yellow leaves on one of the plants were dying. Actually, and not just powdery, because powdery is kind of what you get when you get zinnias and things like
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly.
They don't die.
Yeah.
And then I seem to have more luck with my tomatoes because I had those red tents around them, but then whatever it is got to them too. I'm not sure if it's because the plants next to me were touching or what the scoop is. And I'm wondering, you know, I mean, people don't seem to understand, even though we can plant what we want in our plots, we're one big farm, and I just think a lot of people actually in the non-organic plots have used a lot of chemicals, and it's killing a lot of the safety bugs.
The beneficial insects?
Mm-hmm.
If they're using fungicides, it shouldn't have an effect on insects,
but
insecticides.
No, but we're doing things like Ortho 7.
That will...
So it's really a struggle. I, you know, sometimes wonder if, like, being with 300 plots is...
is the way to go.
Yeah, they're always... Always issues.
There's always issues. I mean, even my oregano has spots. I mean, that's how bad it is. This
year we have a lot of foliar spot issues. Fungi are favored by the kinds of humid and wet conditions that we've had. There are bacterial spots, too.
Right. That's what she said we had on the tomatoes at first.
Okay.
At least
yeah.
in one garden. So what is it like when there's spots on the oregano? Is that still safe to eat or...
Boy, that one I've got to take a pass on.
Okay.
That one I'm really not sure about.
Okay.
Amanda or the West Madison Ag Station
okay.
would be the one to ask about that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Catherine, for calling. Appreciate it. And Dennis in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. On to you now. Hi, Dennis.
Hi there. My question deals with tomatoes.
Okay.
I know it's not the greatest, but... I know that the yellow tomato has less acid than the red. Is there another variety that has less acid than the yellow?
Oh, that's a good question. And I bet our canning people would know that type of thing. I don't know. West Madison Ag Station might know.
Thing is, the tomatoes have been bred to be less and less acid.
Yeah, over time.
Over time. And
could there be a white tomato by chance out there?
Not that I know about.
I thought I had seen.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I thought. I mean, it's, you know, it's light green. But I don't know whether that necessarily means that it's going to be less acidic. Boy, I know more about growing the plant and the diseases of the plant than I know about the internal chemistry, I'm afraid.
Just looking, there is a white tomato.
Okay, yeah.
The great white beefsteak tomato.
Yeah. Cross it over with a pumpkin, maybe you'll have something better.
There you go. So there are beefsteaks out there, but sweet flavor, lots of juice. That's what they say, but I don't know about the acid. Probably low. They got to be low.
I would think so. Yeah.
So it might be something to give a look online and see for next year.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I was trying to think if any of the places I dealt with have seeds for that. You might try.
Jung's might have it.
Yeah. I was thinking there's a company that's called Totally Tomatoes that. That's pretty much what they do, are tomatoes, so you might want to try and get in touch with them.
Totally Tomato. Yeah, and they would have probably some more information on the
exactly.
acid levels of those. So Totally Tomatoes, if you put that in your search engine, you're going to find that'll pop up pretty quickly. Good luck, Dennis. Thank you for calling. Wow, lots of tomato questions. Jerry,
it's tomato day.
Let's go somewhere else. Jerry in Clintonville.
Good morning. Very interesting show, Larry and Lisa. Now, about 4 or 5 years ago, I planted raspberries, and they've been doing fairly good. But this year, I've lost about 3/4 of my plants. I don't know. Is it best to probably start over in a different area of the garden, or get rid of it and just leave it the land lay for a while? And or what would be best to do in something like this?
Okay. Let me ask some questions about your care of the raspberries. And are they everbearing, or are they?
Yeah, some are and some aren't. I guess some from Jung's and, you know, pretty good berries that they're about the ones that are surviving. And the other ones are more of a summer bearing.
Okay. And so you've taken care of them with the proper pruning and so on. If they're the summer bearing, you cut off the flowering canes after they're done for the season.
Yeah, okay. I did. Well, this last year I cut a. Should I be doing that in the fall then right away? Or
you can do it in the fall, or if you so desire, you can do it during the dormant season, or even before growth starts in the spring. What I'm wondering is what they died from. I'm trying to determine whether you may have a cane borer or a stem girdler, or whether it's a root disease. Can you give me some of the symptoms before they died?
Well, I mulched them with wood mulch, you know. Heck, you know, I don't know, maybe there was some kind of a bug got in there or something like that.
What kind of wood
mulch?
Well,
it was a...
like sawdust?
Well, I did have some sawdust I threw in there. I don't know if that was a good idea or what. And then there was some hemlock mulch that I use around, you know, for plants and things that do real well with it. But I thought, well, maybe... I had hemlock bark is what I put in there.
Okay. Well, that's shouldn't be a problem.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't, you know, a pallet that you chipped up or something.
No,
because
no.
Then you can end up with some nitrogen deficiency with a high carbon source like that. You still may need to add a little bit, but did they turn bright yellow before they died, or did they turn brown and crispy? Or
yeah, mainly brown and crispy, I think. And I got a lot of it. I got a lot of thistle in there too. It just seems to be, can't get rid of it.
Oh, that's awful stuff. I know. I just spent yesterday painting by hand, herbicide on many thistles. I guess it could be, you know, it could be a soil-borne thing like verticillium wilt. If you lost all of, or 30, what did you say, 75%?
About 3/4 of the 50-foot length row. You
know? All in 1 year, I guess, yeah, I would try a different spot.
Yeah, that's what the gal from Jung said. She was said, don't take a chance, and, you know.
Yeah, because if it is verticillium wilt,
and
nothing
just leave
can
the land, don't plant anything for a while. And,
yeah.
Let it go.
Do try and get rid of the thistles, though. You don't
right,
need any
yeah,
more of those.
I mean, I'll work it up and do it, so.
All right.
Yeah,
okay,
and make sure that you're at least 10 feet away from the old spot, if not more.
More is probably even better.
Better, yeah.
And we had an email from Robert who was writing about the slug problem that the gal called about.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he sprinkles cornmeal, not corn gluten, but cornmeal around the plants, and he swears the slugs will not cross the line. Cornmeal.
That's
an
inexpensive, gritty and
inexpensive way to what the heck? Give it a try.
And there's probably some nitrogen benefit that occurs as it decays as well.
So cornmeal, not corn gluten.
Well, we'll have to try that.
Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest on Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net, Larry Mueller with Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Glad to have her along, and thank you for listening in. We have lots of callers online, and we have some emails. Let's go to the phones and Tom in West Bend, who's been waiting quite a while. Tom, hello.
Hi, good morning. I have an 8-year-old maple tree. It's about 15 feet tall now, and it's overall healthy, except that the top 2 feet of the branches at the very tip, every year they turn black and red and brown, and then they're gone early. So right now they're bare. And initially it was planted too deep, and I pulled back the soil, you know, down about 6 inches, and ever since the trouble surfaced about 3 or 4 years ago. And so this has been recurring every year. I did lose another maple I had too deep when I planted it. So what can I do you think, and what will eventually happen to the tree?
Okay. You were saying that the all around the tree on the ends of the branches are dying? Is that
no, the very tip of the tree, the top 1.5 or 2 feet every year, it's fairly, there's some little leaves, but then they're bare and they're gone by now. So those branches,
okay.
Just the very tip, the top 1.5 or 2 feet.
Hmm.
Okay. That could be caused by girdling root. It could be caused by verticillium wilt, but I would expect to see if it is verticillium wilt that you'd have die back on other branches as well. Is it in a real windy area?
It's a tiny bit windy, but the whole tree is healthy, and I
except
have other
for that...
another maple right near it that's fine.
Huh. Have
but
you...
it could be a the roots were too I had them buried a little too deep maybe at the
mm-hmm.
beginning.
Mm-hmm. You don't have any girdling root going on where the root is circling the trunk and kind of strangling it, do you?
Not at the surface where I can see it.
Where you can see it. Okay. Were these bald and burlap trees when you planted them? Okay.
Yeah, they were.
All right. Less likely then.
They're really good trees. I mean, they're from McKay's. They're very good.
Mm-hmm. Have you had an arborist check on them? What I'm wondering is if there's a canker or something that happened up near the top of the tree that is impeding the flow of nutrients to that section of it. You need a climber really to check on that.
I consulted a guy that, and he told me for 2 years in a row I put a 5-gallon pail of water with a packet of Miracle-Gro in it. He said to give it a shot of that, and I did that 2 years in a row, just once a year. And I don't know whether that helped or not. And
the problem is it doesn't sound like it's getting up to the top of the tree.
Yeah, right. So something is going on up there, and if you don't see any girdling roots, and you fixed that problem as best you can, I kind of wonder if there isn't a pathogen at work up there or possibly a structural problem.
Okay, so maybe contact the county.
I'd get a professional arborist.
Certified arborist, yeah.
Certified professional arborist to take a look at it, because...
All righty.
Then you're going to get a good, I think.
Yeah. Go to the, if you Google Wisconsin Arborists Association, that'll get you to where you need to be.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for calling. And Jim and Amro, on to you. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Three gardens, and I'm telling you, they're just wonderful this year.
Great.
But I have a question about my sweet corn. I've noticed that this year there's a lot more smut than usual in it, and I would like to know what is it and what can I do in the future to prevent it.
Okay. Corn smut is a fungus. Actually, you could sell it.
Yeah.
It's one thing that you can do. In Latin American countries, it's considered a delicacy.
What do they do with it?
Cook it and eat it.
Yeah, they cook it. It's called huitlacoche. And let's see, corn smut. Do you know what cultivar you had of corn?
No, I just know it's a super sweet right offhand.
Okay. Probably what's going on is, you know, weather-related, I would assume, if you're having more of it this year. Did you change anything else, new spot that you planted it, or?
No, I did not.
Okay. Let's see. I know we do have information on it. It's probably on our website. Also, if you're looking this up on the internet, be sure and put corn smut before the word smut, or you will find much information that is no use to you. Shoot, I thought we had a fact sheet on it, Larry, but... he's looking up all of the recipes.
I'm just looking at some recipes there. There are some recipes on there.
I don't think there's much you can do about it at this point in time this year.
No.
Is there something in that it gets into the soil? I'm just trying to prevent something.
I understand. I believe it is not soil-borne, but... I would have to look that up to be sure.
Okay. Well, I'll study it.
All right.
Corn smut.
Look up corn smut, and you can find out how to eat it.
Yeah. apparently, it's quite tasty.
Joe and Madison, on to you. Hi, Joe. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry and Lisa. Several times a year, I either fog the yard or this year... I bought the Cutter brand of mosquito liquid that you spray on the lawn with a hose end sprayer. And what I'm calling to inquire about is, are there any long-term disadvantages to doing something like that?
Yes.
Boy, we really like it when the mosquitoes are gone, I'll tell you that. And
I hear you.
Yeah, you know, and both seem to be fairly effective in doing it. But was just wondering kind of what's the environmental downside of doing that, even, you know, again, three or four times a year?
Three times a year, I wouldn't say, is a big problem. Mm. But if you get much more than that, and depending on what time of year you spray it, you know, I certainly wouldn't want to spray it during, if you have fruit trees during, you know, honeybee pollination season, because you really don't want to kill off your pollinators.
Sure.
But the thing is that it does tend to increase the incidence of things like mites, spider mites, which are sucking insects that we tend to see, unfortunately, a lot of, like in years like this, where, you know, usually we don't see it in wet years, but this year we've had both high heat and times of drought, or at least high temperatures, and we've had wet times. So we have been seeing some spider mite damage, and they are not affected by the spray, whereas the beneficial insects that keep them in check are affected by the spray. So you tend to see a rise in those sorts of insects, not the beneficials, but the spider mites, when you spray a lot of the permethrin-type products.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not that they're not affected, but they're affected less, I guess we could say.
Okay. Okay, so a couple of times a year is okay.
Right.
Yeah.
But
you know, once a month.
Too many more. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So now, the other thing, while I was on hold here, heard about the bare spots in lawn can be caused by these Japanese beetles?
It can be. Typically, we would see that in lawns that are very well cared for, that are highly fertilized, highly watered. Or if you're near a golf course, that's where we tend to have the biggest problem with Japanese beetles,
right,
actually, because they love that turf that is so nicely taken care of. And the soils tend to be a little bit sandy, so, you know, they drain well, but they're moist. And so if you do have critters that are digging holes in your lawn looking for grubs, if you have large areas that have died for no apparent reason, if you dig down and you find a lot of grubs, that's always a good sign that that's what the problem is.
So if I dig in and I see grubs, then it's Japanese beetles. Because we've got Japanese beetles, we know that. There, we put hibiscus out on the deck every year.
Oh,
and,
yeah, that's
they
a
love
favorite.
Hibiscus.
Yes, yeah. They do, unfortunately, along with a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm.
It might be, however, there are other types of white grubs. There's June bug grubs and so on. At this time of year, though, you're probably not likely to see a whole lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
You'd probably see more in May and June. But there is a product called imidacloprid. That's the active ingredient that you can use on lawns to help prevent the Japanese beetle problem, if that's what you have.
Understand.
Yep. There you go.
Very good. Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Joe. Phil in Oregon, on to you now. Hi, Phil.
Hello. Good afternoon. I have a question on pear trees and crabgrass. And the first question on pear trees is, I have a seckle pear. I get lots of production, but my pears are rock hard right up until time of frost. And I'm wondering, I thought seckle matured earlier than that. And I was wondering, I only have one, and I know they need a cross pollinator. And I don't know how it's getting cross-pollinated and if that would have an effect on the ripening time.
That shouldn't. Maybe a neighbor has an ornamental pear, like a Bradford, or maybe your street trees in the area. Maybe there's something there, or around a municipal building or something. That would not be uncommon. For that kind of thing to happen. I take it you don't have another neighbor nearby that is growing edible pears that you know of.
No, I don't think there is.
Okay. Well, pears are usually harvested before they are completely ripe. They don't usually ripen on the tree completely. Seckle, as I'm trying to remember here, and you're in Madison, did you say?
Oregon.
Oregon. Okay, close enough.
Yep.
Let's see. Seckle is fine to plant in this area, and
if you're
as
sure
far
it's
as
seckle.
I know, yeah. Are you sure it's seckle? I guess is the next question.
Well, that's it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's got the darker colored skin.
Well, see, to me, the pear itself doesn't look like a seckle either.
I think you've got a... this happened to someone else who phoned in on a previous Garden Talk show. They were told they had one type, and they had actually, it turned out, they had something entirely different. So that may well be your issue, Phil.
You know, what you might want to do is take a picture of the fruits and... send it in to your extension office, and we'll see if we can get the pear identified for you, or at least, you know, a yay or nay is whether or not it looks like a seckle.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Dean in Eau Claire says, is there anything I can do at this time of year to limit the spread of crabgrass in my lawn. Is it a pre-emergent? Is a pre-emergent the best option for reducing crabgrass?
Yeah, I would say that it is. At this time of year, the crabgrass in Madison is already starting to, it's in full seed. And so unless you're willing to go out there and pull off all the seed heads, it's going to be difficult to control. So I would use a pre-emergent in the spring. The timing is usually when the forsythia is in bloom, or I should say forsythia, but
nobody says that.
Nobody says that. But that's when you use your pre-emergent crabgrass control. You can also try the corn gluten meal, mm-hmm. Not corn meal, but the corn gluten, if you prefer, but it probably, it doesn't tend to work as fast or as well as the crabgrass preventer products. You could spray it with Roundup, but that'll take out your other grass as well. And you could reseed in those spots if you kind of wanted to give yourself a little leg up on it this fall yet. You could do that and then just apply the pre-emergent in the spring. You don't want to, though, apply the pre-emergent in the spring and then right away seed, because the pre-emergent will not allow the seeds to germinate.
We had an email from Rebecca, who I believe lives near Duluth. And they had a large silver maple they removed, but the stump, the short stump remains. But they've got hundreds of new little silver maple trees coming up all over. They've been pulling them out by hand, digging up the ground in the garden, trying to rip out the roots. Is there an easier way to get rid of the still thriving root system of the silver maple?
I sympathize with you. My neighbor has a very large silver maple that drops most of its seeds, it appears, on my part of the property. And I, too, have to collect all of those little seeds, and I pull out hundreds of seedlings every year. If you, when you cut it down, did you apply any kind of...
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't. Okay. Well... If you're getting shoots still coming up from the root system, I would paint them with something like Roundup so that that will go down into the root system and kill it and prevent any more. You might want to use something like Ortho Brush Killer on that. That's triclopyr is the active ingredient. As for the little guys, they do at least usually, if they haven't grown, you know, if it hasn't been more than a season, they usually pull out pretty easily. Otherwise, extensive digging is required. If they're just in lawn, you could use a broadleaf weed killer and see if that takes care of them. Other than that, yeah, it's a lot of pulling. I am familiar, highly familiar with the exercise.
And then we have Lisa, who wonders about, has a question about cedar mulch. I put down newspaper and cedar mulch around flowers, and right after that they turn brown, especially a speedwell and penstemon?
Penstemon. Okay.
Was cedar a good choice, or was that the problem, or maybe just a coincidence?
I think it's a coincidence. Penstemon often does turn brown, or at least the stalks that have the flowers on them often will turn brown after blooming. And the speedwell, boy, we have had speedwell problems this year. A lot of them are very susceptible to fungal diseases. And because of our weather patterns this year, I've seen a lot of leaf spot, which often leads to, you know, the whole loss of the whole stem. Often you'll get regrowth from the base, but cedar mulch should be fine. Now, if it is one of those new colored mulches, I don't recommend those because they're basically chipped up wood, which has too much carbon in it, and then you end up with nitrogen deficiencies. But if it's actual cedar mulch, that's okay. That works well. I think it probably was just a coincidence, unless it came from a bulk source where it was piled too high. There is a a phenomenon called sour mulch, where when mulch is piled too high, you get an anaerobic process going in the middle of the pile. And, you know, if it smells kind of off like vinegar, or if it was steaming when it was delivered, that's usually not a good sign. And even if it was in a bag, there could potentially be that problem. So what I typically do when I'm applying new mulch is I water it, particularly if it's around annuals that are more susceptible. Just water it in, and that will leach out whatever chemicals are causing the problem.
Let's go to Lynn in Evansville next. Hi, Lynn.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, my questions regard my birch trees. I have a clump of three birch trees in my front yard, and in about the past month, I've noticed significant, and my neighbor has, significant leaf drop. The leaves are golden and lacy in appearance. They almost look like little jewelry pieces.
Okay.
It appears to be selective to these birch trees because I have surrounding soft maples, and none of their leaves have been touched. I do have bark mulch at the base. What is causing the problems? Is it the beetles? And will this endanger these trees? And what can I do?
Okay, it probably is Japanese beetle.
They like birch.
Yes, that's one of their very favorites, high on their menu. And their feeding pattern is that they skeletonize the leaf. There is the product imidacloprid, which is produced by the Bayer company, same one that makes the aspirin. You can get it in, it's a blue jug, and the imidacloprid is a granular, and what you do is you apply it to the soil and then you water it in. The problem is that it takes a while for the birch to be able to take it up into its leaves and prevent the feeding. So usually you want to put that on in the spring, maybe in April, and then it should protect the tree for the rest of the year. I wouldn't worry too much about the leaf loss at this point in time. And at this point in time, you know, the Japanese beetles are going to be around till about the second week in September. It's probably not soon enough for if you put on the chemical now for it to take it up and do much effect. As long as you're not, you know, seeing entire branches denuded, it probably will be fine. So, there.
There you have it.
And one last question. Should the tree be fertilized in the fall?
Not in the fall.
Okay. You
can fertilize in the spring.
Spring.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, and if you're in a drought area, keep it watered.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, boy, we're about... Well, let's see. Yvonne, have you got a quick question? Hi, Yvonne.
Hi. My question is about these very popular upside-down hanging...
Tomato planters.
Mm-hmm. Has there, I guess, my cherry tomatoes in there look wonderful. I don't remember what variety I have of the, like, of the regular sized tomatoes, but none of them have done very well. Cucumbers didn't do anything. I'm just wondering how, if I'm doing something wrong or.
Probably not. My take on it is that the larger tomatoes need a larger volume of soil. Also, because of the weight of the tomatoes, they aren't always good subjects for hanging pots. You know, if it were a smaller tomato that's, you know, golf ball size or not quite baseball size, that'd be all right. Beefsteaks, I wouldn't use. Also, if you find that they're drying out all the time, that's a good sign that they are not doing well in that confined root space.
And with that, we have to close. Lisa, thank you so much.
Sure.
We'll look forward to your next visit. Lisa Johnson, our guest today, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. And we'll have her back and we'll do it again. Sorry we didn't get to everybody. Looking ahead, though, to Garden Talk next Friday, Bob Tomish, senior lecturer in the Horticulture Department, will be our guest. And Monday, we'll take a look at your health with Bill Boisenault. Stay with us.